History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to take the initiative to ask a few questions and then take a little time to patiently listen as memories that may have been hibernating for decades start to emerge once more. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we become inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. It is Mother's Day weekend, of course, and we're going to meet one very special mother today who happens to be 104 years old. But for those of us fortunate to still have our mothers with us, what a privilege to celebrate them. I've mentioned before that my mother, Linda, served our country as an Army nurse. But more importantly for me, she has powerfully modeled love for others and a servant's heart. And her example is a big reason I've had the privilege of doing this show for so many years. So thanks to my mom and all the moms out there today. And I did say that number, 104. I'll emphasize it again, 104. Because once you hear Dr. Monica Kinnaman, you are not going to believe she's 104. Thanks to my friend Mark Schaefer with Honor Flight of Southern Colorado for introducing me to this veteran of the British Army in World War II, who has written several dog-related books and also contributed material for the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. A century later, Monica still has clear memories of her childhood in the UK.
I grew up in Yorkshire, north of England. I had a very happy childhood, very secure, very happy. And that all changed, of course, when war broke out. And it's never been the same since.
And you were born, if I'm doing my math correctly, you were born while World War I was still going on. Did you grow up with any of those stories?
Last 6 months of World War I. Yes, I was 6 months old when it ended.
So I'm just curious if as a child, since this is the aftermath of this great war, did you grow up hearing some of the stories of how that had affected families around there?
Yes. Everyone was still talking about the Great War to end all wars, which of course it never did. I heard all the war stories, how my father's brother had got the MC for taking out a machine gun, a pit or whatever it was, single-handedly. And so they're very proud of these brothers that had been in the war and been awarded medals and things. So we heard a lot about it, yeah. Much more than the young people talk about World War II now, probably.
Well, and I imagine the childhood that youngsters experience today is quite a bit different from your childhood. Yes. In the 1920s. What are some of the things you remember about those years? Things you did, or maybe dreams of what you might do someday?
We did things together as a family, which people don't do so much today. We'd go to the sea for a vacation every year, all together. I remember when we were growing up, we would all be together, maybe reading, and we'd all have books, and we'd all be together in one room reading around a big fire. Those were the things that I remember, really.
And most of the vets that I talked to were in America. And in the 1920s in America, the economy changed drastically. And all these people lived through the Great Depression here in the United States. Are there some things that you think back on in your childhood in Great Britain that seem very different compared to today?
Well, of course, in those days, yes, it was quite different for me. For instance, we had servants, you know, like we had a cook and a housemaid and a gardener and all this sort of thing, which, of course, now, so I grew up never learning to cook because they didn't want you in the kitchen. I've never made our own beds or anything like that. And so that all changed. You know, my children don't know that sort of life at all. So, yes, it's quite different.
Hearing you say that, I hope this isn't too bad of a stereotype, but just hearing your description, the first thing that popped into my mind was Mary Poppins.
Maybe we had a Mary Poppins, someone to look after the children, and I don't know, it was all completely different. There was a big difference, of course, between the working people and the ones who had the money in the houses, which, of course, was wrong. One understands that now, that everyone should be the same.
Speaking of the same or similar opportunity, as a young woman in Great Britain, did the future for you look different compared to the future for your brother, for example?
Well, I was not allowed to do things like my brother would do. Women in my day, they pretty much stayed home, sort of taught manners and behavior and so on by your mother, and things like values by your father. They really took an interest in the children and taught them things, which I think often they don't bother to do these days.
And this may be a difficult question to answer on the spot, but hearing you say that, I wonder if you have examples in your mind of something that you feel was important, that was very intentionally imparted to you by your mother or your father.
Well, I think it was very important what they did. My father was very strict, like about honesty and the values that you hope your own children will grow up with. I tried to do the same sort of thing with my own children, teach them and spend a lot of time with them.
Do you remember, as a young lady, having a dream, an ambition of someday, here's who I'm going to become, or here's what I'm going to do with my life?
I don't think so, not particularly. I was sort of like all the young ladies waiting at home for the proper gentleman to come round and sweep you off your feet, and you'd get married and just do the same as your parents did. You know, your mother take care of the children and the father work, and I suppose that's what I expected.
And here in the States, any American veteran, I can ask them about December 7th, 1941, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, and they all remember where they were when the war started for the U.S. But World War II was old hat for those of you in England by that time. So do you have a memory of when all of a sudden you realized what was happening and that your country, your homeland, was under attack?
Well, it began in such a weird way because, you know, there was nothing from 38 to 39, and we were all expecting war to break out, and it really didn't at that time. I think the first time that I really realized that we were at war was standing at a bus stop. Of course, people didn't have gas and things for cars. I'd been in the town waiting for a bus to go home, and a plane suddenly came out of the sky. And I don't know if you know the noise a Stuka makes when it dives. We heard this plane coming, and it dived with that awful sound and dropped its bombs, and I was only about 100 yards away from it, so it bombed a huge hotel, and the second bomb, the 1,000-pounders, I remember all of this very clearly. The second bomb fell in the middle of a road, and the third bomb fell on an unoccupied house. And there were many, many casualties from the hotel, and that, I think, is the first indication of war that I ever remember. Then you realized you really were at war.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. And especially, again, you know, there's such a contrast between the experience in America and the experience in England. Most American civilians were never under attack. They may have feared it on the coastlines, but unless they were in Hawaii or maybe just off the Atlantic coast, nothing ever happened to them. So this has confronted you as a very young woman. Can you help us understand how jarring or fear-inducing, how frightening just that prospect was?
I don't remember being afraid. I remember being very confused because nobody knew what was happening. And some people lay down in ditches, in the gutters, like they'd been taught. Some of them just lay down on the ground. Someone just stared like I did, saw the plane disappearing, which was shot down, incidentally, before it reached the coast. It was more a matter of, you know, what the heck happened, rather than being afraid, because it was over by then, by the time you realized what had happened.
So in that moment, that was very alarming. But I'm curious to know how long it took for that to become almost the expectation or the norm to be under attack like that.
Well, nothing else happened for a while. So we sort of went back almost to normal until war really started, the shooting war.
And how did you see that affecting everyday life in England?
Not at all, really. Everyone just went on doing what they always had done. He just carried on as normal.
And was your brother already in the military?
He joined up as soon as he could, right at the beginning. Yes, see, he was sent first to India, went with Wavell's army over to Europe, and then to the desert.
And you were still at home, I'm assuming, during that time?
No, I was in the army by then.
Well, I want to hear that story about why you joined. But, you know, while I'm on the topic of your brother, how often did you hear from him after he went in?
Well, what happened was we heard from him from India, and saying, don't worry, he's okay. And then we didn't hear for quite a long time. And then a card came from, I don't know if it was the Red Cross, I don't remember now, saying, your son is reported missing, believed killed in action. So nobody knew for a long time that he was still alive.
How hard was that to hear? As someone who'd grown up with his sibling.
Terrible. Terrible, because we'd been such a very close family. My parents prayed, you know, all the time. We all did for him. And my father kept on praying, feeling that he was still alive. And then they got another notice saying that he was a prisoner of war. But before then, all his kit had come back with deceased officer's kit on. So it was a terrible time.
So he was captured in North Africa. Afterwards, was any of that information cleared up? Did you hear some of his story and what he had gone through?
Oh, it's unbelievable, the things that happened to him. In fact, finally, and I think he was in his 80s then, we got him to write a history of what had happened. It's absolutely amazing. He escaped 3 times, and he was taken again 3 times. And what he went through then was amazing.
And I'll come back to that to hear about when you finally got to see him again. I think that would be interesting. But so your brother's in, he ends up as a POW. But what made you decide to join the British Army?
Well, there was war on. Everybody was doing something, really, from, you know, 14, 15 up to 80, 90, whatever. The old people were like Home Guard. There were spotters, you know, for German aircraft. Everyone who could did something, really, with my brother being in the army and my elder sister actually was in the Middle East in espionage. She was in Egypt. Her husband was, I don't know what you'd call him, chief of spies. He was the one who used to send the spies out, so she was involved in that too. My father joined the Home Guard. He was about 65 at that time. He volunteered to be a paratrooper, but of course they wouldn't take him.
And your sister, I mean, as you just told us there, was involved in espionage in the Middle East, an area we don't think a lot about when it comes to World War II. Did she ever share any details about some of the things she had done?
Well, she was not in France or any of those places. I think she did it all, maybe, I don't know, the headquarters. But she knew some of the women who had been put into ovens alive, you know, like the Germans did. She knew some of those. So, yes, that was a bad time.
And so for you, you're a young lady, a college-age young woman, and now you're in the Army. What did that mean? Was there a welcome to the Army moment? Were there any surprises in store for you?
Very, very different. from my upbringing. Yes, very different, because you're in with the roughest and toughest, something I'd never been used to. But it was okay, it was just something that had to be done. I did volunteer for the artillery, because that was the most active part a woman could take at that time, so as in anti-aircraft artillery.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions, because here in the States, the options for women were very limited. What were some of the things women did in the British military during World War II that you're aware of?
I don't know. I think they were something to do with the balloon barrages. They sent up balloons because of the dive bombers. They chauffeured American generals, and I think they had a pretty good time, actually.
But you hear, we need volunteers for the artillery, and you raised your hand.
Well, you were asked what branch you wanted to be in. Did you want to be a clerk or a driver or whatever? And I just volunteered for the anti-aircraft artillery.
Did it occur to you that that could be a dangerous job?
Oh, yeah. Yes, we knew a lot of danger, because by then the bombing had all started.
And can you help us understand that? Because most of us have never lived in a situation where we have to worry about a bomb falling while we're walking down the street, or a buzz bomb stopping and coming down, or any of the things that you endured over there. What did that feel like, to live with that prospect on a daily basis?
The British don't get very excited easily and hysterical or anything like that. I think everyone just took it as a matter of course. Everyone went on with their jobs, and you just carried on the best you could under difficult circumstances.
Did you have to deal with loss, with finding out that people that you knew, that you'd grown up with or you'd worked with or been around, had been killed?
Well, yes, several people were killed before I went into the army. Girlfriends that I'd had who'd married army people. A good friend of mine, her brother, who was only 18, he was killed. He was at an airfield, and I don't know what his job there was, but anyway, they bombed the airfield and he was killed. So I did know a few people.
And you knew that by being in anti-aircraft artillery, your position would be one of the primary targets the Germans would like to take out.
Oh, yeah. They used to go for the gun sights and bomb the gun sights. A good friend of mine was in when they bombed that gun sight, and they were all killed. Nearly all of the gunners were all killed. Yeah.
And I want to ask you about where you were and what your job was, but I'm curious too, because this perspective is so different from what I hear from the American veterans. When you found out that the United States was joining the war as an ally, how significant of a development was that?
That was a tremendous, tremendous thing. I think I was home on leave. And I remember my mother, who was a very calm person, rushing in and grabbing hold of me and saying, "The Americans are coming, the Americans are coming, the Americans are coming," getting so excited, because we knew that was our saving, really. We had come just about to the end of everything. We expected an invasion at any time at all. We were shown how to level the guns to make it into a field artillery instead of anti-aircraft, so that they would be ready if there's an invasion. Yes, everyone was cheering, because we knew that was our one hope of salvation. I can't even tell you how thrilled everyone was that would happen.
And just hearing you say that, I know you told me a moment ago that Brits in general don't get melodramatic or overly emotional. There's that whole keep calm and carry on cliche. But you're a 20-something young lady, and they're telling you the Germans are going to land and invade our island and take over. Isn't that a scary thought?
Well, yes. It was always at the back of your mind that the whole of the German army was 20 miles away across the channel, and we knew that they were getting ready to invade. Yes, that was pretty scary. But, you didn't have much time to dwell on things like that. you're too busy really doing what you had to do.
And what we have to do right now is take our first break, but there's much more to come with this remarkable 104-year-old veteran of World War II. You can find photos and a short video with Dr. Monica Kinnaman online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.